If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the all that is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. So this evening our seminar topic is, why pain? Its cause, cure, and dissolution. That sounds hopeful, doesn't it? Why pain? Its cause, cure, and dissolution. So let's start with a little attunement. Take a deep breath. And feel like you're pouring golden light right down through the top of your crown chakra, right down into your body. And just watch this golden light begin to fill your interior. Take another deep breath. And just see it flow down like warm liquid honey. Golden. Filling every single crevasse of your being. All of your meridians, your chakras, your etheric and physical nadis, your nervous system, tributaries, that carry the divine essence of your conscious sentiency throughout the DNA, the mitochondria, and all of the components of your cells. See this golden, honey-like substance, this divine amrita. See it fill your entire being, dissolving all energetics that at this time can be simply dissolved back into the nothingness from which all negativity, all pain, all dis-ease, all discomfort, what seems to arise. And as you dwell in this point of stillness, remember that all healing is simply a return of your mind to original innocence and wholeness. You've never been in a body densified in this dream, this holodeck enactment, in any real sense at all. It became an adopted notion, wholly false, from which you're simply now awakening. You can use this for a mantra if you like. I choose the joy of God instead of pain. Let me share a few ideas from A Course in Miracles based on Lesson 190, which is entitled, I Choose the Joy of God Instead of Pain. I'm going to be reading at random several points in this chapter. Pain is wrong perspective. When it is experienced in any form, it is proof of self-deception. It is not a fact at all. There is no form it takes that will not disappear if seen aright. Pain is a sign. Illusions reign in place of truth. peace to such foolishness. The time has come to laugh at such insane ideas. It is your thoughts alone that cause you pain. Nothing external to your mind can hurt or injure you in any way. There is no cause beyond yourself that can reach down and bring oppression. No one but yourself affects you. There is nothing in the world that has the power to make you ill, or sad, or weak, or frail. It is you who have the power to dominate all things you see by merely recognizing what you are. As you perceive the harmlessness in them, they will accept your holy will as theirs. And what was seen as fearful now becomes a source of innocence and holiness. The world you see does nothing. It has no effects at all. It merely represents your thoughts and will change entirely as you elect to change your mind and choose the joy of God is what you really want. Yourself is radiant in this holy joy, unchanged, unchanging, and unchangeable, forever and forever. The world may seem to cause you pain, and yet the world, as causeless, has no power to cause. As an effect, it cannot make effects. As an illusion, it is what you wish. Your idle wishes represent its pain. Your strange desires bring it evil dreams. Your thoughts of death envelop it in fear. While in your kind forgiveness does it live? Pain is the thought of evil taking form and working havoc in your holy mind. Pain is the ransom you have gladly paid not to be free. And so, again, we make the only choice that can ever be made. We choose between illusions and the truth, or pain and joy, or hell and heaven. Let our gratitude unto our teacher fill our hearts, as we are free to choose our joy instead of pain, our holiness in place of sin, the peace of God instead of conflict, and the light of heaven for the darkness of the world. So the field of our endeavor, bottom line, is cultivating more conscious awareness of our divine perfection, to the point that it becomes a solid conviction. It is just something we have such confidence in that it is our automatic default setting for how we view ourselves, others, and the world. As we spoke last week, all forms, everything that is thought congealed and densified into thought and into form, ultimately dissolves into true spaciousness. It becomes that beingness that's called Sat, S-A-T, in Sanskrit, that eternal existence. And all conditioned thought dissolves ultimately into light and bliss, or Chitta and Ananda. So you have Sat, Chit, Ananda, beingness, awareness, and bliss. That is the ultimate truth of all things, and there's nothing else but that. There's nothing else but that. So unless you are experiencing that sense of spacious beingness, light and bliss, there's some work to be done. Now, the three major causes for suffering and every form of pain is ignorance, attachment, and aversion. Every form of dis-ease, whether manifesting as mental, emotional, physical, any form of pain, can be traced to these three states: ignorance, attachment, aversion. So let's look at ignorance. The ignorance we are referring to is of not knowing and understanding one's true nature, one's true divine immortal self, and of not knowing the nature of the imperishable reality that exists just beyond the thought band of conditioned patterns of thinking and believing, just beyond that. The imperishable divine realms are present all the time, in you, around you, on the right, the left, below, above, as far as you can expand your awareness. You're in the Satchitananda of the all that is, as the all that is. So the nature of reality, as well as one's true self, is ever pure, ever changeless, and immortal. And it's just the lack of awareness of what is real and true that's the root cause of all pain and suffering. The gross material dimensions, however, have the nature of continually changing and giving the appearance of impure qualities. And all things that seem to be born into this world also seem to die and depart this world. And yet all form is but thought, densified by ignorance and delusion. All form is but thought, densified by ignorance and delusion. And yet suffering is caused by trying to cling to what is continually changing. And this is called attachment. And trying to avoid the loss of these things one is attached to is inevitable, since loss of all material things is going to happen at some point. And this gives rise to intense pain and suffering. Thus, the ignorance of the changeless reality and of one's true self, one's immortal existence as perfect divinity, is the cause of pain. Attempting to avoid and ward off or control the inevitable changes and losses that are the nature of samsara, that is to say, this illusory world, is what most people are experiencing and believing to be normal life. And it's not. So the pain that one experiences over the course of countless serial dreams, or what people often refer to as, quote, past lifetimes, which are really a form of serial dream episodes that we have identified with in time and space, this process of accumulation of pain and suffering and the conditioning that painful and suffering has embedded in the consciousness as a pattern is cumulative and stored. And this is what has been referred to by Eckhart Tolle and others as the pain body. In fact, in the Buddhist tradition, there's quite a teaching about the pain body. And this is something that every single one of us is challenged in dealing with to some degree, because we all have this pain body. Now, we can use the pain body as our doorway to freedom. In fact, we can use everything to step free, because everything is simply energy and consciousness. that has been conditioned. And that consciousness which has been liberated through awareness. So consciousness is thought patterns that have been conditioned, and awareness is the stepping beyond the conditioning into beingness and bliss. So we really don't experience pain in the body, per se. As strange as that may sound, all pain is experienced in the mind. I think a good hypnotist can really very readily demonstrate that to anyone. But I'm taking the word of the Master Jesus as he spoke about it in A Course in Miracles, that the body itself is completely insentient, completely inert. And quoting him, it shouldn't feel either good or bad. It shouldn't have any feeling at all, period. It really is a thought form that simply floats around the periphery of our radiance like a little dark storm cloud. We're not in a body. We're not a body. We've never been here at all in any real sense. It's all a mind trip. So all pain is caused by the mind in the mode of ignorance, attachment, and aversion. And likewise, all healing is of the mind and returning it to eternal wholeness, returning its awareness to its eternal wholeness. You never left that. We've given several seminars on which we likened your passage through time and space as like a shadow that passes over all kinds of terrain but doesn't affect you at all. And yet when you identify with a shadow play, you get entrapped in it in what is called a cycle of karma and reincarnation. And that's how all bondage and attachment is formed. So pain is the result of stuffed and stored experiences from our past. All our unprocessed, undigested hurt and trauma, wherever we've experienced pain, and rather than dealing with it, have denied it, or dismissed it, or disassociated from it, all of that has gone into a collective that's been termed the pain body. And we all carry over from these serial dreams that we call lifetimes, these tendencies called samskaras. And these are patterns of mental and emotional conditioning. And at some point, these must be addressed and forgiven and released back into the nothingness from which all negativity but seems to arise. That meditation that I started our evening with is a very good one for you to use, where you allow the golden essence of the supreme Satchitananda, of the all that is, that's formless and spacious and perfect, to fill and displace the dissonance within your whole being. You just fill yourself with this. You can imagine it as the sweetness of honey if you like. Why not? Why not be full of sweetness? So a sudden epiphany of enlightenment can cause the dissolution of the entire pain body in an instant. Because like all illusions, the pain body is not real. So the key to understanding the bigger question of why is there pain and suffering in the first place is this: only what God created is real. Now, I know here in the West we don't have a clue really of what God is. We've been given the idea that he's a judgmental old guy with a long beard sitting on a throne somewhere, getting ready to judge and punish us and destroy the world and wreak vengeance on everything and everyone. But according to Jesus and the Course in Miracles, that's an entire invention of the ego's mind. So that whole concept of a vengeful and thunderbolt hurling God is where man, separated man, ego mind, has created a God after his own image and likeness, which is vengeful and mean-spirited and throwing thunderbolts at each other. So we have to go a little bit deeper in understanding what God is. And you can only go to a God-realized master, preferably a full avatar, to get a sense of what God is. Everybody else is going to be giving you probably an idea that they have conjured out of their intellect, and the mind, the lower rational mind, can't conceive of anything beyond its own thought system. It can't go beyond that because it's made up of conditioned thought. So they're trying actually to find God through the most faulty instrument possible, that is the very embodiment of the concept of separation and sin and pain and suffering as what we deserve, because we're all guilty, fallen sinners and destined for hell. That's the thing that what we've been taught and taught and taught until we haven't a concept of a God of love. So we're going to have to just take that on faith by truly God-realized mystics and adepts and masters and avatars, that God is love. And according to A Course in Miracles, authored by Jesus, only what God created is real. Nothing real can be threatened. Think about that. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. That's the very quintessential Course in Miracles in a nutshell. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. So only what God created is real. And there's a whole set of lessons in A Course in Miracles that deals with all of our personal repertoire of fears and terrors and things that we dread. And as we quietly examine each one in the light that only what God created of love, like himself, is real, our mind is corrected and healed by the divine spirit within us. So the mind is corrected and healed as it's returned to truth. And with it, the fear goes, and the pain eventually dissolves. So if it's not like God, pure, infinite love, and eternal perfection, it is not real. I know we've got a horrible outpicturing of the ego's nightmare that we see on the news each night and on the Weather Channel and the things that are happening in the world. And Jesus said we have to learn to look upon these things and look past their appearance and remember that no one really is here. These are images projected out of the separated mind. And that's the good news. No one, in highest truth, is suffering, dying, being killed, or in any way affected by the drama that seems to be playing itself out in this gerbil cage of the ego's nightmare run amok. So we're looking at only at images our minds have projected and given interpretation. Everything we see, we have given the interpretation and the meaning that it has to us. And that's all. Of itself, it's just neutral. So the ego's interpretation is never accurate. And this can be discerned and dismissed simply as being false. The Course in Miracles teaches, I am affected only by my thoughts. My thoughts give all the meaning anything has for me. And that, again, is one of the lessons in the Course. So therefore, to heal anything is to realize that we remain forever as God created us. And that is our platform of truth that, upon which we take our stand. And we position ourselves so firmly in confidence that this is so, that all that is not aligned with this simply dissolves. And this can be very fast in some instances where we really want this more than the ego's drama. And where the drama, you know, still has some attraction, the restoration is recognized more gradually. So all healing is simply a return of the mind to the love that is our true self and nature. And in that, the pain body is dissolved. So the pain body is dissolved by awareness. That's all. As I said, all thought eventually dissolves into light. And light and awareness are one. So every time you simply observe the pain on whichever level it arises, without mental commentary, it dissolves. Without mental commentary. Generally speaking, we will think of those sensations and own them in some way and begin to think like we have to do something about it. But the doing is what solidifies it in your mind as being real, and then you really have a problem to deal with. So the way to dissolve it is just to be cool, hang back, observe it without elaboration, not letting your mind do anything with it, and it simply dissolves. Now, when you can remember the truth of your divine perfection now, in the midst of any pain arising, that dissolution can be permanent. Moreover, Jesus said that the whole timeline and the whole series of effects that erroneous belief system has spawned in your future, the whole thing is wiped clean. The whole thing is dissolved and erased as if it never had happened. Which in highest truth, it never has happened, but we believed it did. So that whole thing is dissolved for you by the Holy Spirit when you can stay present and remember the truth of your perfection in the midst of any pain arising. And that remembering, that kind of remembering, that looking beyond is true forgiveness. It's not making it real to yourself first and then forgiving it. It's recognizing it never really happened in the first place. That's also called in the Course of Miracles accepting the atonement or the at-one-ment. And the fact of your eternal at-one-ment with divine perfection, wholeness, and harmony is what the atonement is. So with this remembrance, peace is recognized as presence, as present, and as presence. The present becomes the presence of spaciousness. Eckhart Tolle speaks about that a lot. So practice spacious presence. I call it expanding divine awareness. Kind of go out somewhere where you can just be yourself and practice like we suggested last week, feeling yourself as space surrounding your body and begin to expand that sense of beingness beyond what you can think of as the confines or the boundaries of your body or your thoughts or your beliefs or anything at all. Experiencing what is beyond that. And thus you can heal your own pain body and also the pain body of whomever you see as whole and holy and perfectly divine. So whenever you look at someone with that divine Deva Drishti, that God's sight, looking past the appearance of human imperfection and shadow play to that person who in highest truth has never left the heart of God any more than you have, he began to heal and dissolve them. And that's all true healing is. So by holding this space of awareness, you're doing more to help end all pain, war, and suffering than all the military forces, doctors, and psychologists in the world combined. Just by holding this space of awareness, that is the greatest gift you can give to yourself and all humanity and this planet, is by enlightening yourself, expanding your sense of being into true presence and spaciousness. So we are the saviors, the enlightened ones, the Buddhas, the messiahs of these times. And one person can stand in at one moment and affect the entire collective and turn the global tide of events to one of grace and beneficent outcome, which I believe is what we're doing right now. So the perfect divinity that you are dissolves the pain of the body in stillness. You know, we're told sometimes when you're in great pain to just watch it, just observe it, just try to go into it as deeply as you can, because usually it's the avoidance and the denial that causes the most pain. We used to practice that in India when we get a mosquito bite, you know. I swear they're as big as butterflies, and they dive bomb you when you're trying to meditate. And after a while, I mean, you just can't meditate unless you rise above these critters. So we would practice, you know, like focusing as hard as we could on the itch of the mosquito bite. And at some point, that awareness, that focus, dissolves the sense of the itch. And that's a perfect demonstration of how the illusion dissolves when you put your full attention upon it. Because remember, your attention, that which looks through your eyes, is the light of God. Because it's the light of God that we see in. That's what gives vision, is the light of God, not our eyes. We see by the light of awareness that's within us. So simply hanging out in confident wholeness and silent observation dissolves physical pain. Now you'll notice when people are in the pain body, they also have a pain speech. The pain speech is in evidence anytime a person is angry or shouting or arguing or resisting or focusing upon their pain and their victimization. In other words, all negative speech is pain speech. So, along with identifying falsely with the pain body of the past, because pain is always in the past, and allowing that to color your sense of who you are and what you are, you will observe that in people because they will also match it with pain speech. So you catch yourself doing that by observation and you zip it. Instead of giving words to your pain, you have enough presence present with you that you can zip your lips and not speak from the pain body. In fact, Sai Baba said that we should always speak words that are cool, comforting, and give rise to happiness in everyone we speak to. Wow. Our speech needs to be cool, comforting, and give rise only to happiness in those who are listening. Wow, if we would make that as our daily commitment, you know, to give rise to happiness in our speech, in our interchanges with people, And you know, that's as simple as smiling and being pleasant and kind and courteous and having respect. You know, that's a way that we can give happiness. How much happiness is conveyed by a sweet smile and a soft word, soft encouragement. So by expanding awareness of being spacious presence, we can dissolve the pain of the mind. So you have the pain body and the pain speech, but that just simply is a manifestation from the pain mind, which has bought into the past drama and trauma and the story that it has made up about all of that. So awareness is the antidote and the curing that dissolves the pain mind. And then with it, the pain body completely dissipates, just like fog in the sun, and is simply no more. So you really don't have to do anything but increase your conscious awareness of who and what you are forever, and the whole thing dissolves. So, one of the biggest things that has been a block to people is the fact that the chakras that are doorways into the different planes of consciousness and experience are generally log-jammed and blocked by identifying with the pain body. And the three lower chakras are security, sensation, and power. And those would pretty much define the arena in which the ego works, although each of the chakras has an ego manifestation as well as a higher divine manifestation. I think I did a show or two on this many years back, but I'll probably need to do another one. But I just want to look at the major chakras that are usually log-jammed and blocked that give us the most problem in our relationships. We all have a self-protective mechanism that kicks in whenever we are threatened with anything that looks like it's going to threaten our livelihood, our survival, so that no one is actually present in their body, for example, during a violent or traumatic event. We will all split, meaning we'll escape to another level of consciousness that blocks out the details. Or we'll watch out of body, hovering above the scene, but experiencing no pain, and even seeing from a place of impersonal detachment and compassion in some cases. However, those experiences and the pain and shock and trauma are nevertheless stored along with all of the interpretations we formed about what happened and how we felt about the experience. And this is all stored in the subconscious mind as the pain body or the unconscious mind. Subconscious, unconscious, pretty much the same thing. And that is what becomes triggered sometimes by seemingly innocent, taken out of context, seemingly, events or words or situations, or even by certain sounds or scents. So we've all known people, and maybe we're one, or used to be one, who suddenly goes ballistic and has a intense emotional reaction for no apparent reason. And this happens when the pain body has been triggered by something associated with a former painful event. In extreme cases, this was termed in earlier years war nerves. I remember my dad had this really bad. My sister and I didn't dare touch him when he was asleep because he would yell, you know, he would hit out, you know, start fighting and be sound asleep, but he'd be fighting and saying, hit the trenches, the enemy is coming. And, you know, those are war nerves. But more recently, it's been called post-traumatic distress. And in the East, these have been linked to conditions arising from so-called past lives that have given rise to such phobias as tight spaces or heights or snakes or water or whatever, those phobias that come in that don't seem to have any relationship to this lifetime, that's part of that stuffed trauma from the past. And sometimes this is the current life. So all of these illogical fears and aversions or attractions and obsessions are part of the pain body. And this is what we're referring to when we say a person is carrying a lot of baggage or is dealing with their personal demons. And this subconscious pain causes all the strange forms of acting out that people exhibit and also accounts for all the addictive and obsessive compulsive psychotic behaviors and psychological disorders. In extreme examples, you have people who are normally quiet and withdrawn and suddenly go on a shooting rampage. And these people are often so closed down that they lack any ability to feel any degree of emotion or any kind of connection with their true loving nature, much less any heart connection. So the heart is totally closed down, notwithstanding, because if the three lower chakras are closed, you know, how can the heart be open? So you will generally find that they're totally locked into one of their lower chakras, and usually all three. And the pain has been stuffed and log-jammed into this first, second, and third chakra system, so that they're all blocked and clogged. You might say they're totally spiritually constipated. And quite literally, they are stuck in their own personal hell realms. That's hell. Those are the states of consciousness we refer to as hell. So a majority of people on this planet are blocked and locked up in their lower chakras of security, sensation, and power. And people locked in the first or root chakra feel insecure. They're fearful, concerned with survival issues, financial lack of energy, strength, vitality, get up and go, motivation. That is a blocked first or root chakra. And they often feel physically and emotionally cold or even numb. And this is why some teens that are experiencing these blocks will start cutting or acting out in any way that they can feel like they're alive, even if it's through inflicting pain on themselves. Now, a blocked second chakra will result in all kinds of relationship and sexual and intimacy issues. Everything from antisocial isolation to rampant promiscuity. Yeah, even promiscuity is the result of a blocked and closed down second chakra. Seems strange, doesn't it? So again, these blocks prevent one from experiencing genuine closeness in relationships, or even to feel genuine pleasure. A blocked second chakra can be the cause of why a woman is unable to experience an orgasm, or a man having erectile dysfunction and impotency. So nearly all relationship problems and conflicts and arguments and divorces can be traced to blocks in the first and second chakras. Now, those blocked in the third chakra, and here's where you have your employer conflicts most often, tend to run patterns of passive aggression, victim-victimizer, and all the various forms of power, manipulation, control, and domination drama. And so these are nearly every person on Earth has their work cut out for them. For until they heal, their wounds will bleed all over their every area of their life, really, and certainly their relationships. And life is relationship. So wounded people cause all of the wars, conflicts, crimes, and mayhem in this world. So it's an issue that we can't avoid dealing with. And the place for everyone to start is with healing themselves. You're the only person that can do anything about yourself, short of receiving the grace of a God-conscious avatar who can wipe the whole slate clean in a nanosecond if you can come to them with in the right time, in the right cycle, in the right space. But, you know, that's not probably going to happen to a lot of people. So, the first thing to look is where do you tend to lose it? What triggers your emotional reactions? Where do you notice strong feelings of attraction, of attachment, or aversion and avoidance? And just become aware of what you're feeling and what comes up for you in certain situations without judging it. You know, that's where you attach and get trapped, is when you start judging. Just watch it. Don't own it. These are not you. These are conditioned energy patterns. They're interpretations. They're not who you are. So there are many approaches and practitioners of energy healing and chakra balancing and clearing. And the key to any approach working for you is your faith in it and the rapport and trust that you have with the practitioner and their methodology. So that's what makes it work, is your faith in it. Because again, it's all a mind trip. It's what you believe that has entrapped you, and it's what you believe that also is going to help set you free. So again, your mind is either your jail, you know, your prison warden, or your liberator, depending on what you're allowing it to follow, the ego or the Lord. So each culture has its shamanic tradition, and shamans are experts in clearing, balancing, and healing our energy bodies. One of the things they deal with is essence retrieval, which they call sometimes soul retrieval. It's where traumatized portions of the consciousness become locked in time-space, and in a sense, the shaman can travel in the second attention with the person and retrieve that traumatic part and reintegrate it, clear and balance it. And many times people have a tremendous sense of healing after that. Again, it has to do with faith and belief in the process. So today there are many alternative and holistic modalities that we can select from, and they're becoming more and more recognized and accepted as valid within the medical field. I think Dr. Deepak Chopra has done a tremendous service, and Larry Dorsey and others, and what's her name? Hayes, Louise Hayes, as so many of them have stepped forward with tremendous insights into the body-mind connection and how these things work, and how they can all work together. The medical field and alternative and holistic modalities can work together as a team, because God is the only healer and will work through anyone and anything that you have faith with. Anything and anyone can be an agent of your healing if you have unshakable faith in that. So faith and confidence in what you've chosen to work with is absolutely imperative, you know, to have that rapport and trust in your practice, practitioner, and methodology. And always remember that only the divine spirit can accomplish a lasting healing and transformation, regardless of the practitioner or the methods employed. Now, some conditions of a purely karmic nature can be canceled entirely by grace. I know many people who came to Sai Baba and were healed. Several, he simply said, your cancer is canceled. Your cancer is canceled. One woman had diabetes, and during an interview, Baba materialized a ring with an amber stone in it, which was the color of her urine. And he told her that as she was in the process of being healed, the stone would change color to match the color of her urine. And I saw the stone change while I was there. So, and I remember one time I had a terrible gallbladder attack. I was in a lot of pain. And so I went to the little hospital, you know, that you'd have to sit and wait in line. And finally somebody would see you, and the little doctor, this was before the super specialty hospital was built, the little doctor came and gave me some pills. And they always wrap them in a little packet, kind of like the Vibhuti, the ash. They wrap it in a little packet. They don't give you like a bottle. They'll give you like 10 in a little paper wrapper, newspaper usually. So I took them back to the ashram room where I was staying, and I sat down, and I started to unwrap the pills. And they absolutely vanished from they vanished right in front of my eyes. I didn't take my eyes off of them, and Sai Baba completely dematerialized them. So, okay. I go down later that afternoon for darshan, which is when Sai Baba comes out and he walks among the people. He'll take letters sometimes, or he'll materialize for Bhuti, or he'll give a few words to people. And I just pointed to my solar plexus, and I said, "Hurts, Swami, hurts." And he looked me up and down, and the pain completely vanished. And I didn't have another pain in my gallbladder for many, many years. And then later, when I was able to have surgery, it was removed. But that was like 15 years later, maybe even longer, before I had to have the surgery. So this is an example of where probably I had some karma attached to that, and he alleviated it enough to where I could be in a position where I could have it removed at the proper time. So where a karmic lesson has been learned, and I think mine was tied up with resentment. I used to have a lot of resentment. And I find that resentment is when you keep resending the same emotion out again and again. And you can believe me on this one, that will give you gallbladder attacks and gallstones, because those resented feelings solidify and become gallstones. And I think that was the karma that I had from running that pattern. But anyway, I don't have it anymore. And I can't even remember the last time I felt resentment. I just don't go there anymore. So you do learn. You do work out these karmic lessons. So the rule of thumb here is what you can cure, you don't have to endure. So it's good to do all in your power to restore health and harmony in every area of your life, you know, but also be detached. Because when a condition remains, regardless of what you've tried, and you know, then you just have to accept it and be at peace with it. For there's a very good reason that you'll find out one day for it to be present. So be at peace with whatever is present in your life. Find a way to have tea with it. Be at peace with it. Because when you fight something, you know, what you resist persists. The more you fight something, the more you solidify it as a reality in your energy field, and the more it will tend to be attached to you. So aversion is just as binding as attachment, and resistance assures that it's going to stay in place. And we've all seen people who argue for their weakness and their shortcomings. In fact, the ego, that's what it always does. You can always tell when the ego is trying to run the show, because it will argue for its limitations so convincingly that sometimes you buy into it and believe it. But you have to ask yourself, do I want to be sick and in pain? Do I want to resist the very process that would set me free? And of course, you as a soul don't, but your ego sure does. So discern. Don't let the most immature, stupid part of yourself run your life. Really don't, because there's no value. So acceptance is so important, simply accepting that which is present and doing what you can to make it work for you. Make it work for your spiritual advancement. Use it as a meditation. Use it as an opportunity to detach and observe and dissolve. And then great peace comes. Simply by accepting as fact that God works all together for our ultimate good. Jesus says a happy outcome to all things is assured. Not for the ego and its agenda, no way, Jose, but all things work together for our good when they're in aligned with love, when they're in alignment with truth. So once you've placed that higher power in charge of your life, something greater than that human part, that lower mind, that ego, simply takes over and assures the best outcome. And that's the happy news. That is the thing that we have as a takeaway here. So the world, I'm quoting from the Course of Miracles here again, the world can give you only what you gave it. For being nothing but your own projection, it has no meaning apart from what you found in it and placed your faith in. Your faith will be rewarded as you gave it. You will accept your treasure, and if you place your faith in the past, the future will be just like it. Wherever and whatever you hold dear and you think is yours will be there. So the power of your valuing will make it consistent and present in your life. So atonement brings a reevaluation of everything that we cherish, for it's the means by which the Holy Spirit can separate the false and the true, which we have accepted into our mind without distinction. And that's where it's so helpful to stop periodically and ask yourself, that higher part of yourself, the divine spirit within your mind, to decide for you, to discern for you, and then be aware of where the energy moves and what thoughts come into your mind. And go with the loving. Walk with God. Walk with spacious presence. And allow the illusion simply to be healed and dissolved back into the nothingness from which it only appeared to arise. So let's go out chanting on I Hear. Deep breath. Also a very good chant to dissolve negative patterns in the mind and in the body and in the consciousness. And pain speech is dissolved by chanting Anahu. So God bless you, and God willing, I will be with you this time next week. May all the worlds and all the beings of all the worlds awaken to their divine, immortal state as pure love. Baruch Hashem.